Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the stories we're covering today, Friday, October 12th, 2018. Several people are reported killed in intercommunal violence.
Listen, that was yesterday. They also clashed again, the same group, and it was badly completely by resulting into 8 people killed.
And South Sudanese say people continue to be detained without charge.
I don't really appreciate people serving more than one month in the prison, yet they are not convicted. It's a concern to almost everybody.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Tarakeka state officials say more than 20 people were killed and 30 others injured in intercommunal violence that has rocked the area for the past 5 days. Officials are asking Juba to send help quickly. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
Tarakeka State Information Minister Dominic Lado says fighting between two communities, one from Tarakeka North County and another from Gwer County, started on Monday, some 4 kilometers outside state headquarters.
On 11, that was yesterday. They also clashed again, the same group, and it was badly completely by resulting into 8 people killed from Mundari Cobra and 11 people injured from the same section. While from the site of Mundari Nyangwara, 4 people killed and 20 injured from the same section.
Chief Kilosa Mudi of Tarakeka says the fighting was triggered by migrating pastoralists who stole dozens of goats from the Dwor community in Tarakeka State. Dwor is located approximately 50 kilometers northwest of Juba. Mudi says the pastoralist used AK-47 rifles, spears and sticks to fight each other.
About 20-something or 19 killers. They are in there. Who are killed are about 16.
Mudi says community leaders and the state authorities have intervened and are trying to calm tensions between the communities, especially angry youths. Speaking in Arabic, Tarakeka resident Nani Justin says armed pastoralists are still roaming around Tarakeka state headquarters with guns and looting homes. She says the fighting continues and her own home was looted during the day. She says the pastoralists are the ones doing the looting. Justin says he does not know where she will spend the night after the armed youths looted her house. She says the dead are lying on the ground and the injured have been brought to the hospital. Justin says traffic along the Juba-Tarakeka road has come to a standstill because the fighting pastoralists are moving with large numbers of cattle along the same road. Information Minister Lado calls the situation unfortunate and appeals to the national government to send security forces to stop the violence.
There must be reinforcement from our leadership in the national government for our forces to at least make sure they stop these people fighting each other. And as a government, we also decided that the committees from both sides tomorrow must go and at least tell the people to remain in their locations, not to come to the roadside or to ambush the other side. And meanwhile, those who are going with their cattle camps, they must wait until the government will arrange for their repatriation or going to their location peacefully.
For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Hundreds of pastoralists from Jungle, Lakes, and Warup states have been living and grazing their cattle in Equatoria for several years now, and now they're returning home, as requested by President Salva Kiir. The pastoralists are being escorted by the South Sudan People's Defense Forces. Jacob Bacek met up with the cattle keepers on their journey home recently and has this report for VOA from Juba.
Pastoralists and their several hundred cattle settled into camp overnight at Kuburmandi Sin along the road on the eastern side of the Nile River. The pastoralist says they want to rest for a few days before continuing on to Bor in Jongle State. Pastoralist Denkwal of Bor County says he has lived and grazed cattle in Equatoria for the first 5 years since the fighting began. It is not clear how many pastoralists and cattle are leaving the Equatoria region for Jongle, Lake and Werribee states. But Deng says each cattle camp have about 30 heads of cattle and each head of cattle has about 30 dozen cattle. Speaking in Dinka, Kwal says he left Nyolo village along the Juba Nimli road 3 days ago. He says so far 8 cattle camped from Nyolo village have reached Juba and are now on their way to Bor.
Soldiers have been pressuring us to leave Equatoria for the past 1 year. Now that I have reached here, I hope to proceed to Bor. Some of my cattle were left behind. The calves and the much older cows strayed and got lost in the bush while we moved. I left 4 calves behind, but as you can see, the government is escorting us forcefully, and I have no means of returning to look for the lost calves.
The presence of pastoralists across Equatoria led to clashes with members of largely farming host communities who complained about cattle destroying their crops. Army spokesperson Brigadier General Lulu Raikong says the army has been ordered to escort and protect the pastoralists until they reach their villages.
They have difficulties in having a clear view of the direction they are going to, and this is what will be attributing to loss of their calves and cows. So they have a lot of challenges, but of course our main responsibility is to provide security. They were also... Some of the vulnerable groups were also identified so that they could be given special attention. So we are doing our best within the means that we have at the moment.
Kwal accused the army of forcing pastoralists out of Equatoria. Kong says the army is following orders from President Salva Kiir to return pastoralists to their homes areas after local farmers complained to the government. Jonglei State Information Minister Atong Kwal Manyang says state and local government officials, as well as friends and former neighbors, eagerly awaited the arrival of the returning pastoralists.
The community is very happy, and the youth would like to be part of it. When these people cross our territory, they would like also to receive them and join them so that they come together. So I believe when they reach our territory, whichever side of the border, we will be aware, and there are people also who will receive them and come with them.
Kwal says state authorities are preferring open ground to receive the pastoralists and their cattle, as well as medicines for both the cattle keepers and their livestock. The vast majority of South Sudanese pastoralists left their villages years ago for fear of insecurity, child abduction, and cattle diseases. For VOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Juba.
Some Jonglei State residents say their relatives are being detained for months, and some even years, without trial. The Jonglei State Public Attorney says he's filed more than 10 cases, including 7 murder cases, but none of them have been heard in court. Dengai Deng has the story for VOA from Bor.
Bor resident Joseph Achek says his relatives have been in prison for 40 weeks without trial due to absence of justice. John Yelaleo, the president of Jonglei State High Court, who was presiding over his relative's case.
I don't really appreciate people serving more than one month in the prison, yet they are not convicted. It's a concern to almost everybody. Whoever the relatives is serving while he's not convicted is not really happy with that. And we appeal to the authority concerned that they should convict people before they are taken to prison.
Advocate Makur Yola says he has 2 clients in prison who are also waiting for the absentee judge to appear.
I have a case of my client called Mahut Mohun Garangtuj. I submitted the appeal in the absence of the judge or president of High Court with a stay of execution because my client is waiting in prisons, and if the court was there, maybe the court can decide whether you can consider the stay of execution and or you can dismiss it. It affects directly our client because justice delay, justice denied.
Yola says forcing people to serve time is illegal because a suspect is supposed to be presumed innocent until he or she is found guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, according to South Sudanese law. Jonglei Public Attorney Alung Riak says Judge Aliu has not shown up in court for a month now. He says detaining suspects indefinitely without trial violates their rights of access to justice.
We are the prosecutors of the government. We used to receive cases, including the cases relating to the murders and robbery. This case is supposed to be trial by the High Court. From the date we refer the case to the court, they are supposed to be brought to the court next day to the court so that they can hear and then they can be trial, either to be convicted or to be released. There is some cases he started, then he leave them and then he go to Juba. So now we have something like 8 cases waiting for him for trial as a murder cases.
Jonkuch Ju Jonkuch is the spokesman at the board-based advocacy group, Jonglei Institute for Peace, Democracy and Development.
Has it been stated in the Constitution of South Sudan, at Chapter 1, Article 19, that anyone accused of committing a crime should be tried within 24 hours? The right has been violated. The concerned authority should sit down and see the best way that they can help these people at the prison.
Justice Aliu says he left for Juba last month because the Chief Justice assigned him to work in Jonglei for 3 months, which he says he has done. Speaking by phone from Juba, Justice Aliu says he went to report to the Chief Justice after serving his 3 months in the Jonglei State Court system.
For reporting, because I'm being assigned for Jonglei State just for a mission of a special court for 3 months, and it's over. So I have to go back to my boss, the Chief Justice, and to report to him. And I get my report, and I'm working for him.
Justice Aliu says he does not know when or if he will ever return to Jonglei State. Riak says he will travel to Juba this week to find out what the National Judiciary is doing to replace Justice Aliu in the Jonglei State High Court. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
The Bank of South Sudan has ordered the Kenya Commercial Bank to close all the accounts of Karabino Wool Agok, one of the prisoners who led the riot at the National Security Headquarters over the weekend. The director of the Sud Institute, Jock Madut Jock, says the fate of the detainees who rioted at Blue House is not known. And he says there are many other detention centers in Juba where political detainees are kept for months without trial.
In all fairness to the government, there is a possibility that there are other facilities where people may be held. At one point, there was some indication that people used to be held in mobile detention cells, some boxes that have been made to be carried around by cars. But I think what is at play with regards to these people who have been decreed by the president to be released is that there is the usual lack of coordination between institutions of government. The president might decree. There is a little nuance here that has not been identified by a lot of people, and that is the decree ordered the chief of armed forces, the chief of defense, to release the political detainees. It did not order national security or any other institutions that may be detaining people for their conscience. So there may be that little discrepancy in the definition of who was actually ordered to release whomever they detain. Does that apply to the national security? We don't know. But that is the sort of opaque environment that could lead to decrees being issued, but none of the decrees being implemented because nobody knows who has been ordered to do what.
You have people languishing behind the bars. What are you doing to secure their release?
Well, there is very little we can do other than to simply continue to urge and nudge our leaders to, one, respect our own constitution, because our constitution doesn't allow prolonged detention without trial, without charges.
But is the constitution of South Sudan being respected by those in power?
In this regard, it is not. Because otherwise, if anybody was paying attention to the constitution, nobody should be held without charge for more than 24 hours. That is what our law says. So obviously, somebody is amiss with regards to adherence to the land of the law, to the laws of the land.
Let us look at the constitution of the country and the National Security Act. Which one supersedes the other?
I would say in this regard, the National Security Act supersedes the constitution because it is attached to this idea of defending the national security of the country. So it is the bill, the National Security Bill itself, that is being contested, even though it has been signed into law. The way it came into law has been questionable and has been debated greatly. And so citizens who are of the mind that they live in a free, open, and democratic society like South Sudan will never accept that there is such a law that is so draconian as to go and pick somebody up and detain them indefinitely without charge.
How would you characterize the society in South Sudan?
South Sudan as a country, as a people, as a nation, is democratic by its very nature, in the sense that many South Sudanese are open people. If you go to the rural areas, you will find that the chief is being told by an ordinary mortal that, chief, you govern badly. And there is nothing the chief can do. The problem now begins to exhibit itself with people who are quote-unquote educated or people who are in the cities and who are holding public office. We are neither a democratic society in the real sense, nor are we traditional in the real sense, because at least traditionally we are more open.
That is Jock Madut Jock, director of the Juba-based Sud Institute, speaking earlier this week with my colleague John Tanza from London. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America, a deadly landslide in a neighboring country. Find out more when we return.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what do you think is most important to live a good life?
You need to work hard, yeah, because, you know, when God helps, you also have to do your part and work hard. And also friends are a big thing in your life as it goes on. So friends who are loyal, God, and hard work bring out the best in a person.
Stay happily. You don't have any regrets. You live in every moment you live.
To live a good life, one, you must be simple and humble. Okay? Two, you must be honest so that people can love you.
Good life I am seeing is having a free life, a life without enemies. Secondly, a simple life, a life, not life of bragging, a life of saying I am this and this, no. Lastly, life of holiness also.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
A mudslide on the slopes of Uganda's Mountain Elgon has left dozens dead, hundreds missing, including an entire school and other people homeless. The disaster was triggered by a heavy downpour that lasted some 4 hours. Catherine Namby reports for VOA from Kampala.
A search and rescue operation is continuing in eastern Uganda's Bududa district, where about 51 bodies have been recovered and hundreds are missing following yesterday's mudslide. The death toll is expected to rise. People had gathered from several towns for a market day when the river Sume burst its banks, sending boulders, crashing down on the crowd and raising houses. Godfrey Watenga represents the area in parliament.
We can't establish the number of people who are dead because being a market day in Naposhi, there are those who are from Manafa. We are just picking them from the waters. There are those who are from Sirongo. The traders were there in the same center. More property has been destroyed. All bridges have gone. Roads have been cut off. There's a school which has been taken.
Rescue workers are digging through heaps of mud. About 200 children are unaccounted for from a school that was washed away. James Kiwumi is a resident of Sume, one of the affected villages.
Some children from one school called Shitetei have also been swept in the very river, and over 400 missing.
Uganda's government has dispatched a disaster team comprising police and other rescue teams to beef up the district disaster rescue and recovery team. Patrick Onyango is the Uganda police spokesperson.
We have to make on-site assessment. For example, what is required, what equipment to be used, how to reach the site, who to access the site, because not everybody should reach there.
A local team armed with hose sticks is digging through the mud in desperate attempts to rescue their loved ones. Many survivors whose houses were swept away are reportedly sleeping in the cold. Meanwhile, the downpours are continuing, hampering rescue operations. Landslides are a common occurrence in the hilly parts of eastern Uganda. In 2010, massive landslides hit Bududa, killing about 100 people and destroying buildings, including the village market and a church. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
The World Health Organization says insecurity in neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo's North Kivu province is undermining Ebola control efforts. The WHO reports the number of Ebola cases has reached 200, including 125 deaths, and it says the virus could spread into Uganda and Rwanda. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The World Health Organization reports the epicenter of the Ebola outbreak has moved from the village of Mangina to the city of Beni, the scene of frequent attacks by a Ugandan rebel group against civilians and government forces. WHO spokesman Tarek Shazarevich says the attacks by the rebel Allied Defense Forces are not targeted at responders, but he says the dangers are too great for health workers to move around freely in so-called red zones.
We can't go for a couple of hours to some areas because there's either a shooting going on or there is a protest by groups in the city on this violence.
Shazarevich says the incidents have forced frontline workers to suspend important activities, increasing the risk of the spread of the Ebola virus. Nevertheless, efforts to contain the deadly virus continue and important inroads are being made. Shazarevich says health and frontline workers are being vaccinated, as are eligible people who came into contact with those infected by Ebola.
Since the beginning of the vaccination that started on August 8th, and that's like a week after the declaration of outbreak, 15,807 persons have been vaccinated in different areas.
The WHO has raised its risk assessment for the outbreak at both national and regional levels from high to very high. It urges neighboring provinces and countries to increase surveillance and preparedness activities in case the virus crosses borders and infects new populations. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The World Bank Group revealed a new index yesterday for ranking countries based on their success in developing human capital. It's an effort to spur governments to invest more in education and healthcare. In the bank's new Human Capital Index, Chad and South Sudan ranked the worst. Singapore topped the list, followed by South Korea, Japan, and Hong Kong. The rankings are based on health, education, and survivability measures. The World Bank uses the index to assess the future productivity and earnings potential for citizens of 157 member nations. Well, it's a big weekend in African football as teams across the country continue their quest for Cameroon 2019. These Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers will end in March 2019, and then we'll know the full field of 24 teams, the biggest field in Nations Cup history that will feature in Cameroon. In one of the Nations Cup qualifiers on Saturday, the Cranes of Uganda will host the Crocodiles of Lesotho. Magume Davis Rakabwinji has this preview from Uganda's capital, Kampala.
Uganda Cranes engage in their last preparations at Nelson Mandela National Stadium venue for tomorrow's clash against Lesotho's Crocodiles. Uganda Cranes coach Sebastian Desabri, whose team drew 0-0 against Tanzania Taifa Stars last month, says he's confident his team will win tomorrow's game.
We have worked very well, it's a good spirit. We have spoken a lot of time with the players to secure those players, understand the importance of these two next games, I'm happy with this camp. We know the responsibilities we have during these two games, and I think we are ready, and we put offensive disposition tomorrow to score in first during this game.
After three games, Uganda leads Group L with 4 points. Tanzania and Lesotho have 2 points, while Cape Verde has only 1 point. Dennis Onyango, Uganda's captain and goalkeeper, says besides aiming at keeping a clean sheet, his team must score many goals. But he says they won't underestimate their opponents.
Someone might say we're playing probably a small team, but in football there's no small teams anymore. You work for every result. So for us, we know we have a game to play, a very strong team. The boys know that at the back of their mind, and they'll give their best on Saturday. Of course, we want to go to Maseru with positive results.
Sports writer and analyst Aisha Nakato says many Ugandans expect their team to win tomorrow's game.
But I know at the back of their minds, at the back of every Ugandan's mind, this game tomorrow is a must win in order to reduce all the pressure on them in the future. You don't want to go to Tanzania in March next year when you haven't qualified yet, so they need to finish this off. This game is important, yes, not only to the country, but especially to the coach. He is yet to get a win as a new coach, so this game as well is very important for him to let Ugandans know that he is the right man for the job.
Captain Onyango says players are well aware of the expectations from home fans.
Of course, there's always pressure when you play at home, because we've set up a record at home that we normally win, and everyone expects a win, but we know that at the back of our mind that we must give our best at home. And it applies everywhere. When you're in your own home, you must give your best and you must have a positive result. And it comes with a lot of pressure, but all we need to do is to win the game and the pressure will come down.
Uganda Cranes have not lost a game at home since 2014, when they lost to Togo, captained by former Arsenal star Emmanuel Adebayo. Any team in this group can qualify if they win their remaining games. Aya Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
And that's our show for this Friday. We leave you with the song Work by Adekunle Gold. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and we appreciate you making us a part of your evening and invite you to look us up on our Twitter handle at VOA South Sudan. Have a great weekend, everybody, and we'll see you here on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Anything where you want to, you go get them if you want. Stop living fake life. Ororo no be too doy. Pussy cat no be tiger. Monkey at the gym party. Walk you, walk you. But I no be for monkey. You wanna have a big boy. Swagger on your volley. Walk you, walk you. Or I mean, take my much. Walk you, walk you. Watch your boat to be your body. Walk you, walk you. You say you want expensive shit, but them a far away with you. You where you never am out, but them a bow on your brother. You go rock and my run down, but in me double your solo. You respect yourself, yo. Stop living fake life. Ororo no be too doy. Pussy cat no be tiger. Monkey at the gym party. Walk you, walk you. But I know before monkey, oh. You wanna have a big boy. Swagger on your volley, oh. Walk you, walk you. For a meet the pa much, oh. Walk you, walk you. Watch your boat to be your body, oh. Walk you, walk you. For a meet Muratish, oh. Muratish, walk you, walk you. Watch your boat to be your body, oh. Walk you, walk you. Now you can go deep or come. Drinking water. Follow my water, see, oh, the road, yeah. Now only you, they make him out every time. Then you get it, you pay your money, no fee back. Stop living fake life.